Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike DeTellier along with Herb Tyler. We're here at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road, here in Baton Rouge. Come on by and see us. They'll have the doors open at 11 o'clock and start serving. And, man, you can watch all the football games this afternoon here at Acme. They got great food and drink specials. And so come on by. Great service. And we'll have Jason on with us who runs a place here. Talk to us a little bit about what's happening. And we will also want to thank our presenting sponsor, Map Construction. Map Bill Beyond, always great to take care of us here in Baton Rouge. Herb, I guess the luster has been taken off a lot of these bowls if you're not involved in that final 12.
And yep.
Man, the last 2 weeks, I know doing sports talk, we've talked much more about the transfer portal than the Texas Bowl. I think I might have got one call about the Texas Bowl. Everything else is about the transfer portal. So it goes to show how things have changed in college football today. And it's a different look team than how LSU ended the season. You won't see Campbell at left tackle.
Nope.
Will's coming out early for the draft. Same thing with Emory Jones at the right tackle position. Garrett Dellinger will sit out this game. He's had that tightrope surgery on his ankle, and he's preparing for the NFL draft. He has been invited to the Senior Bowl. We'll see if he shows up in Mobile. Kyron Lacy from Thibodeau doing the exact same sort of thing. Won't play in the Texas Bowl, but is expected to play in Mobile, and Mason Taylor, the tight end. So, man, you got five key pieces that won't be there going up against a Baylor team. And we talked a little bit about it with Ian before, starting up here, is that, man, Baylor, they got off to a 2-4 start. And I thought Dave Aranda was going to be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
And then he peels off six straight wins. Now, you don't associate high-powered offense with Dave Aranda, but they are averaging 41 points a game scored over the last 6 weeks. Now, they're giving up 27, so, you know, if that's the case, then that's why you're winning. You kind of tsunami in everybody. Their offense has really rolled the past few weeks to end the season. Sawyer Robertson, who's a really good quarterback for him, he's completed almost 63% of his passes, 26 touchdowns, but what jumps out at me, only 7 interceptions. So he's not turning the ball over. They got a nice 1-2 punch at running back with Bryson Washington, who's averaging 5.9 yards a carry. And Dawson Pendergrass, he's the number two guy. He's averaging 6.1.
Mm-hmm.
So, man, I expect if you took the over today, you might be better off, because I don't think either one of the defenses are going to stop one another. And Baylor is just trying to outscore you.
That's right. So, you know, to touch on what you were talking about first, which was the bowl game schedule and what that looks like and how it's kind of obsolete right now. These, you know, bowls, everything that's outside the college football playoffs, it's important to the teams that are there and the fan base that are watching their teams that are in those bowl games. But it's still not, one of these things where people were looking forward to these bowl games. Now we're looking forward to the bowl games. Well, I am, because I want to see those younger players who are going to play, because, you know, a couple of few years ago is where the elite players were, you know, I'm going to sit out. I'm going to start sitting out. And we're talking, what, almost 8 years ago now, 9 years
You know
ago.
Who might have been the first one to do that? Christian McCaffrey.
That's right.
Christian, at Stanford.
Well, Christian, and I think, didn't Leonard? Leonard was one.
Leonard also.
As well was one. So I remember, you know, that happening, and that started a little bit of a trend. And people were upset. But like Cam Ward said the other day, I paid the first half, not the second half. It's a business decision. I don't expect you to understand.
And he's still taking heat foot.
And but what? At the end of the day, it was an agreement that he and his coach went into before the game. So it's okay at the end of the day. But ultimately, the bowl games are still there for the younger guys who have an opportunity to play an extended game after the season is over and be rewarded for a fantastic season of at least getting 6 wins throughout the season. So that being said, we go into this Texas Bowl, and you have LSU, who's going to be missing five guys on defense. You're going to be missing five guys on offense, one or two guys on defense, one being Major Burns. That's going to be a bit of a challenge for LSU as well. But ultimately, you give these younger guys an opportunity to come in live action on the neutral field, playing against a really good coach team in Baylor from coached by Dave Aranda, who we know is going to give a great defensive game plan, and he's going to mix it up because he don't have the talent that he always would have at LSU to play man-to-man and run with everybody and let's go and blitz and all this other stuff. Now he's going to be coming from all sorts of angles and areas from the field. And then on top of that, you compile that with a really decent offensive game plan. Like you said, they're averaging 41 points a game. Now let's go down the tail of the schedule. Texas Tech, Oklahoma State, TCU, West Virginia, Houston, and Kansas were those six wins at the end of the season. Now, when you look at those six wins, you got about two or three teams in that sprinkling that could have beat them. But the other teams, I think they really were a much better team then. But ultimately, you come into this game today, and it's anybody's game. I don't think that it's going to be a for sure Baylor win. I don't think it's going to be a for sure LSU win. But what I do think is going to happen is we're going to find out who are the guys that's going to be leading the LSU Tigers into the 2025 season and who's going to be the guys that's going to be available for them that's going to maturate during this offseason and who's going to have some promise after this game today.
Yeah, and you're moving Miles Frazer from the guard position. Now you're moving him out to tackle.
Yep.
And we're getting to see Tyree Adams. We saw a little bit of him during the season. He's going to be the left tackle to replace Will Campbell. DJ Chester, I think this may be the last game you see him at center.
Yeah.
Because, you're recruiting these, transfer portal guys.
Yeah.
You know exactly what's going to happen. DJ is going to be moved back to guard. Mm-hmm. DJ had never played center before until they gave him a shot there. He struggled with it. And then, you got the redshirt freshman in Paul Mabinga.
Yep.
He struggled also being in the lineups. And we're going to get to see Weston Davis, who has played some right tackle, also some right guard.
Mm-hmm.
And Bo Bordelon also will play at the guard position. So a lot of new faces up front. So you know what that tells me? If I'm Garrett Nussmeier, man, I'm getting rid of that football fast.
Getting rid of the ball fast, or you're going to slide right, left, get out of the pocket, one of the two.
My thing is, it ain't going to be 1-2 throw. It's going to be one throw.
That's right.
It's going to be quick. I think this is also a big game for a guy that, he missed so much of the season. That's Chris Hilton Jr. Because Chris came into the season with a lot of promise. At Manning Passing Academy, I talked to Garrett Nussmeier, and he told me, he said, your guy, Kyron, man, he's going to be the guy for us this year. But I'm really looking forward to working with Chris Hilton because he brings that speed element to the table. And even when he came back, Herb, he struggled. Kind of high-pointing the ball in flight. He was jumping too fast. He wasn't running to the ball. But then we saw him make a couple of great catches late in the season. So it's big for Chris to build upon that. And Tre'Davious Green, who they moved to wide receiver, now they kicked him back to tight end because of transfer portal losses and not having Mason Taylor.
Well, you look at Chris Hilton's season or the little bit of what we got to see, you can understand why he wasn't, in, I guess, the top-tier level of playing at the moment when he came in, because he was out forever, if you can think about it. And then it's almost like watching a little kid get an opportunity to get in and start playing around with the bigger kids. He's going to show any and everybody that he can do any and everything that he can, but not just playing the game and not doing what he knows how to do. And that's just run the routes, go catch the football, make touchdowns. He was, like you were saying, his struggles with high pointing the football, I think it's just anxiousness and wanting it too much and not allowing it to come to him and then just make the play. And so when you talk about him, this game being an opportunity to kind of be a catapult for him moving into the next season, it's going to be awesome for me to see this. Now, Garrett's going to need some time to get him the ball, and Chris is going to have to do a really good job of running clean, crisp routes and just giving a little bit of a window for Garrett to have anticipation to get the ball to him and not have to wait and pat the football and then hope that he's open by 2 yards, if that makes sense. Now, the other thing on the other side of that is when you talk about Green coming down as a tight end, I think that's a phenomenal opportunity for Green to be able to show what he can do. Now he's not coming in, you know, off the bench. He's going to be a starter. He's going to be asked to do things that he wasn't asked to do throughout the year. And let's see exactly what this guy can bring to the table. Now you talk about Zay Thomas and then Aaron Anderson.
Now, Aaron's the guy, I think, if I'm Garrett, I trust him. I trust him.
I actually trust all of them, to be honest with you. The one thing, and the reason why you trust Aaron so much is because he's the comeback player of the year, whatever you want to call it, most improved, and all this other stuff, and he's going to be one of your guys moving forward. But you got Chris on that other side, who I think you can make some stuff happen. And then Zay Thomas also can be your guy that you get the ball in space and let him make some moves and see what can happen. Now, ultimately, it's going to be fun to watch this new group come in and work together for the first time. But it's going to be difficult. I don't think it's going to be pretty at first because of the way that the offensive line is going to be shuffled. Now, ultimately, you also want to see what this offensive line is going to do when it comes to the run game. Because that's been the part or a weakness, if you will, this entire season, is that everybody's been complaining about the run game. Now, you know, you have Caden Durham, who came on the scene and really made a big splash. But, you know, your guy Williams is the guy. You know, he's the one that's going to be the workhorse, the chop the tree down guy. He's going to be the guy to get the football constantly today, I think, and it's going to be important for him to play well and to be a leader on this team.
One of the guys we had talked about before the season, Caleb Jackson, he's sort of been in the witness protection agency this year. He hadn't done a lot. And I'll be honest with you, I thought I would see his name in the transfer portal real quickly, and it hasn't. So for him, I think you'll get some opportunities. I agree with you on Josh because of the fact he's a senior, and he has stuck around. And, okay, he's not the biggest. He's not the fastest. He's not the quickest. But, man, he gives you everything he's got on every play. You know what Caden can do, man, because he has shown that he's got an extra gear out into the open field. And he runs better in between the tackles than I think maybe we thought. Caleb's the guy that we thought would be a much bigger part of this offense, and it didn't work out.
So when you look at Caleb, you're looking at a guy who's still young, who's still learning, who's trying to come into his own. And I think that there was a lot of pressure on him early to be successful. And so now he's had an opportunity to sit back, watch, say, okay, how do I handle myself like a professional or a professional college player? And that's watching Josh. That's watching Caden, who's a true freshman, who is mature beyond his age. And so I think that Caleb, this is a great game for Caleb to get about 6 to 7 carries, show what he can do, go into the offseason, get his body right, get his mind right, and learn the offense. Actually learn what he's supposed to do on the blocking schemes as well as run schemes and pass route running, things of that nature. And I think Caleb can be the guy to have a breakout year next year because it's going to be Caden, Caleb, and then you throw in the Harlan Berry next year, who can be phenomenal, but we don't know yet. Because he's going to be a true freshman, 5-star, all of that. But I think Harlem is going to be a guy that they're going to try to get the ball to. But I think Caleb can come into the spring season and really make a name for himself and come out of the spring as a important piece of the puzzle that can help LSU become great in the run game.
And I think we'll have a little bit more clarification to what happens with Trey Holly.
So that's the interesting thing about that, right?
There's some things happening. None of us really know for sure.
No.
We think he'll be back, but that hasn't been clarified.
No, they've got some small little things that they're trying to iron out, and it's kind of been like pushed back, what we call in the construction world, pushed to the right, meaning it's going to
know exactly. I know that phrase.
Yeah, and we don't like that phrase at all.
No, at all.
But that, I think that's something that can be important. If Trey can come back, man, think about that backfield. You got Harlem, Caden, Caleb, and Trey. All guys that's going to be around the same age that can be phenomenal, you know, at the end of the day.
We'll be back with more of our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. We're here at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road here in Baton Rouge. Doors open up at 11 o'clock. We'll be back with more of our Tiger Tailgating Show right after this break. We're back here on the Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike DeTillia along with the legendary Herb. Herb Tyler here.
Legendary.
How about that? We even got Ian Hoke to say that too. How about that?
That's
Herb?
Right.
So that's $2 for me I get today. Getting off
that's
for
$4,
that.
That's
yeah, okay. I'll take the $4.
That's right.
And we also want to thank Map Construction. They do a great job each and every week in sponsoring our show here. Our naming sponsor, Map Construction, and Herb knows all about maps. So you can give Herb a call if you need some work done.
That's right.
At Map Construction. He'll take care of that for you. We have with us from Acme Oyster House, Jason Guilfoyer. Jason's a Bayou guy. Now, that name kind of threw you off,
yes,
but we'll let him explain everything. But, Jason, man, you've taken care of us really well over the last couple of years.
Absolutely.
We really appreciate it. And, you know, this place has certainly grown, but I know one of the things we had talked about before, and probably it's 2 years in the catering business.
Mm-hmm.
That's something y'all had not been involved with, and then all of a sudden, bow, man, y'all catching it now, right?
That's right. That's right. Good morning. Happy to have y'all here, as always.
Yes.
So you're absolutely right, Mike. The catering that's revolved around LSU and the tailgating there has just been phenomenal. The explosion of it all. It's been something to keep up with, and we're happy to have that problem.
Yeah, it's better than not having it.
That's right.
Also, too, you guys also involve, if it's like what I call an event, if it's Thanksgiving, if it's Christmas, yep. New Year's, a lot of times, you know, we live in that world today, and I didn't grow up in it, but we live in that world today where, man, I don't want to cook no more. And so if you need it from the seafood standpoint or whatever, you guys also take care of that very, very well.
Oh, we do. And just the other day, in fact, I had a call early in the morning. This fellow was in a bad spot, needed some seafood gumbo for 15 people. In a couple of hours, he was here picking it up. Just
right.
Good to go. All the fixings, fed the whole family. Everybody was happy.
Okay, so if they want something for New Year's Day, they better call now.
That's right. That's right. We're taking orders right this moment. Let's go.
That's right.
I remember, I think it was the Alabama game. Man, I looked around. I didn't see you. And somebody said, no, Jason's running in the truck. They're running back the tailgate stuff. So that was a great deal. Also, I think Ole Miss, that was another big game for
y'all. Oh, what a day. What a day.
That was
fantastic.
That was big with it. How long has Acme been here in Baton Rouge?
Been here in Baton Rouge for 16 plus years now.
Yep. Okay.
So happy to make it another 16.
The crazy part about it is I didn't know that until the new boss lady took over and she came with us and talked. And she was like, Mike, we are just not in Louisiana, and realized Alabama.
That's right.
And all, kind of all over. So
that's right.
Acme has branched out that particular way.
Absolutely. And, you know, people all along the Gulf Coast understand our food. They understand our flavor profile, and they're looking for us.
How long have you been with Acme?
Oh, just a few years now.
Gotcha.
And I have to say...
But you've been in the food business for a few years.
For many, many years
at
this point. Almost 40 years now.
Wow.
But Acme has been great. That's the whole thing. The culture of Acme is what makes Acme great, and that's why I'm here.
Well, and you can see it extends through your staff as well.
Absolutely.
Here, you know. So.
And they take great care of it. And I kind of watch... Because Luke and I get here real early, and we'll see how well.
Whoa, what do you mean? I don't get here early?
You don't get – well, you get here early if you compare yourself to A-Bear.
Right,
but, I mean, you're not here like an hour ahead of time. But they do a great job. I see how they handle everybody here when they come in, and always attentive to the particular tables. And so that you don't get that everywhere.
That's it. It's family.
No. And you know what else – what I noticed, I'm kind of in the position that you're in with my group. And the camaraderie that you get when you see them sitting at tables together and the conversations and the laughter and the faces and the smiles and all of that stuff, that's important for me to see because I like to sit in the corner and watch that whenever we have meetings and things like that because that tells me that, hey, this group is one, right? There's no individuals, nobody sitting here, there, and other places. They're all together and they're talking about whatever. It don't have to be anything to do with the business.
Oh, that's right. That feeling of family and joy, it's contagious and it transcends.
That's right. That's right. And you can see that here all day long, every day.
Oh, thank you.
One of the things, too, is this is a place, and I've heard some people, they'll come up and say, man, I heard y'all talking about it on WWL radio. You know, we hear from Auburn. We hear from Arkansas.
Yeah.
And they'll hear it, and they'll say, man, we had to stop here. And the fact what Tiger Stadium's, what, a little over a mile from here?
Oh,
so you're not that far away from Tiger Stadium. But you get a lot of visitors, so to speak, coming to the LSU game. And if it's from Ole Miss or Auburn or Arkansas, wherever, they stop here.
You know, that's one of the great things about working for Acme. It's the folks that are coming in.
Yeah.
They're coming here to have a good time. Mm-hmm. They're walking in with cheer. And that's contagious on the other end, too. And so it just works out. It's a fun place to be.
Yeah. What's your favorite dish here that you like to get? What's your go-to?
Ooh, that would have to be the lima beans, and I like to top mine with some fried shrimp.
All right, lima beans and fried shrimp.
That's right.
I like it.
Okay, that wouldn't have been a pick that I would have thought he made, but he's a bayou guy, okay?
That's right.
So we give him a little pass, here's the
know? Thing. You come to Acme, do you think you're going to get lima beans, though, right?
Right.
So that's a whole nother deal in itself. It's like we can surprise you with many different types of dishes that you wouldn't think you would get here.
Oh, that's it. You know, we really have all the ingredients in-house to do it fancy if that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to put some etouffee on top of your redfish and then top that with some lump crab meat or a soft shell crab, we're happy to do all of that.
Wow.
But for me, I like the lima beans.
I like it. So you can kind of make some adjustments to your already standard meals is what you're saying.
Absolutely.
So add-ons.
All right, Jason, I know you grew up in the Thibodaux area. The Guilfoyle last name. Now, I would think you're trying to pass as a bayou guy until I heard you talk a little bit. Now, your voice, man, you got a good radio voice. I'm going to be honest with you. I'll take that. Man.
It's really close.
How your family? Yeah, come on. How your family headed to and kind of grew up on the bayou out in the Thibodaux area?
So while my mom's family was originally from New Orleans, my dad's family came over from Spain via the Canary Islands. Mm. And when they came over, they landed in Donisonville. And one way or another, somehow...
You got to Thibodaux.
They got to Thibodaux.
Well, that ain't a far ride, Donaldsonville.
Oh, that's true.
No, it ain't. Yeah, you're right.
But when they got to the dock, the family, we were assigned that name at the dock.
Okay.
There was some miscommunication along the language barrier that happened there, and the name became Guilfoyle right there, and that was the beginning of the family tree.
Wow, that's...
nice.
Everybody's got a little story about certain things, and...
If
Bobby was here, Lord, he'd give you the whole detail of how you got that Guilfoyle name, even though he
knows
it or not.
He knows,
he would know it.
That's right.
Jason, thanks so much.
Yes,
we appreciate you joining us this morning, and thank you for everything you've done for us here. You and your staff do a fantastic job, and I know we'll open up the doors at 11 o'clock, and you got so many people that are regulars here, too. There's, I'll come here a couple times a week. Y'all going to be here after the football season. I don't know. I know the football season we're here, but thank you so much for everything you and your staff do for us here on WWL.
Thank you. We love having y'all.
Yes. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. We'll be back with more of our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike DeTillia along with Herb Tyler here at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road here in Baton Rouge. We're back here on our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike DeTillia along with Herb Tyler here at Acme Oyster House in Baton Rouge, 3535 Perkins Road. Want to thank our presenting sponsor, Map Construction. Now it's time to go inside the Tiger Den, brought to you by GoTax Resolution. Your GoTax Resolution team, GoTax Go. On our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, covers the Baylor Bears for the Waco Tribune Herald, Zach Smith. Zach, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Happy to be here. Happy to talk about some football. I'm looking forward to one final game.
There you go. I was telling this to Herb that, man, to start the season, you know, I got to know Dave when he was here at LSU. And, boy, I see, you know, a 2-4 start. And I was like, he might be in some trouble there.
That's right.
And then the wheel off 6 straight wins. But it was really built on the offensive side of the ball. How big of a surprise was that? Because you got great production from your quarterback and Sawyer Robertson and Bryson Washington and Dawson Pendergrass.
Yep.
It's kind of be a receiver by committee with then distributing the football a lot to a lot of different people like Josh Cameron, Ashton Hawkins, Hal Presley, and a guy I know a lot about, Michael Trigg at tight end. You know, Mike, highly recruited guy, goes to USC and ends up at Ole Miss and then is with Baylor. So how surprised were you with that, man, to peel off 6 straight wins like that and really to make this season sort of special for Dave? If he can win today, especially against LSU.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the offense, the season-ending winning streak was certainly surprising. Like, it kind of like you said, they were kind of dead in the water to start the year, and to end the way they did is fantastic. And it that was frankly surprising. But the offense itself and the production and all the numbers and everything, like, I kind of expected that. They brought in Jake Spavital. He was the former head coach at Texas State. He coached Johnny Manziel, all that fun stuff. And so they kind of revamped the offense back in January, and they knew what they had. They knew they had the pieces to put everything together, and it was just a matter of time. It took six games for them really to put everything together, and obviously you've seen once it did come together, man, it is hard to stop. And you went down the list. It is, you know, it's not like Sawyer Robertson is a key. Bryson Washington is a key. The offensive line is a key. There are so many names on this offense that can beat you, and that's what makes them so dangerous and consistent. And it's just, man, it has been so much fun to watch. But to answer your question, you know, I am not really surprised at the production of this offense just because of the pieces that they had and kind of what they showed even early on in the spring. They knew what they had, and it's just kind of coming to fruition right now.
Zach, Mike and I talked about the, I guess, lack there of luster, if you will, with the bowl games and things of that nature that's happening now with the playoff and all this other stuff that's going on. What's the energy in the locker room, you think, in the Baylor locker room going into this Texas Bowl against LSU today?
I mean, it's high. This is, you know, I went to Michigan State, so I was around the Michigan State football program back when Mark D'Antonio had them going to bowl games all the time. And it felt like back then bowl games were a big deal. And that's what it kind of feels like for Baylor right now. This team is so happy to be here. They are so motivated to win this game. You know, you got to look really big picture. Go back to last year. At the end of last year, they won three games. Vibes were low. The offense couldn't, you know, move the ball. The defense couldn't stop anyone. And so they just completely just, they wanted to, they were out to prove that was kind of a fluke. And so to do what they did this season and end the season as strong as they have, like, this group is, the vibes are high, the motivation is high, and they are just so happy to be here. You want to talk about opt-outs? There have not been many opt-outs at all. Maybe one player that plays part of the time has entered the transfer portal. Everybody else is playing for Baylor. So this is a full squad, and they are raring to go for this bowl game.
I know you kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, Zach, but talk to us a little bit about the difference between the start of the season and what do you think was the thing that clicked with this team, coaching staff or organization, whatever you want to call it, program, that really turned it around for them? I know you talk players and things like that, but, you know, there's always something that's underlying or something that's bubbling underneath the surface that really makes things start to go the right way. What do you think that was for this team?
Yeah, that's been the million-dollar question. We've asked Dave Aranda and the players that plenty over the last 6 weeks or so. But I think that there was just a confidence that came out when they went to Texas Tech. And that game means a lot to Baylor. That's a rivalry game against a rival. Sawyer Robertson, the quarterback, is from Lubbock. He really wanted to go to Tech, but they didn't offer him a scholarship, so I think if you asked him, gave him some truth serum, he was more motivated for that game. And like I said before, they knew what they had. They just hadn't put it all together. So that Texas Tech game, you know, he goes out there, Sawyer Robertson throws five touchdown passes. Baylor scores the most points in the Dave Aranda era, you know, and they really show that confidence that they had, that they hadn't shown for four full quarters, that confidence just came to fruition and it actually happened. So it's hard to quantify what, like, why the turnaround happened and why this streak is happening. But I think that's the best way we can talk about it. Just because, like, they were kind of out in the wilderness, so to speak, for the first six games, and they couldn't put four quarters together. But that Texas Tech game and the confidence that it brought just changed everything.
Zach, one of the things we living in the world now, kind of pay for play, and that's just the way it is in college athletics today. How has Dave Aranda and his staff embraced the transfer portal, because that's a big part of it. At first, Brian Kelly did not embrace it here at LSU at all.
No,
man, he tapped the brake all over the place.
Was he?
And finally, he's come around to the fact that you cannot live without it. You've got to be able to be competitive in the transfer portal to get some of the pieces when you're going to lose, especially like with LSU. They lose a lot of people early to the NFL draft. How was Dave Aranda and his staff and also the money people at Baylor reacted to the NIL transfer portal era of college sports?
Man, it is a fascinating time to be in college athletics at this point. But that's one thing I give Dave Aranda a lot of credit for. And like I'm sure you said, you know Dave Aranda, he was at LSU. He is brutally honest. Like, he is one of the most honest coaches that I, like, he'll tell it how it is, whether it's good or bad. And so he was very upfront with his shortcomings with the transfer portal and NIL over the last really 3 years or so. And so I think that he has this year kind of gone back into his defensive coordinator thing, defensive coordinator mindset, and kind of let the NIL GM. They brought in an NIL GM and they hired a bunch of people that focus on NIL and the transfer portal. So Dave Aranda definitely has his fingers in all of these holes, but, you know, he is letting the people that know how to do it focus on it. And you're seeing Baylor succeed. Like, they're certainly not LSU, who last time I checked had the number one incoming transfer portal class, but they're fighting, they're filling holes that they need. They're getting top name recruits. They just got a 4-star edge rusher from Oregon yesterday. So, you know, NIL is not as robust as it is in many of the SEC schools at Baylor, but I think that the Baylor like donors, they want to put their money in the smart spots. And I think Dave Aranda and specifically the other people that are kind of running NIL and the transfer portal for Baylor really are doing a good job of picking out the good pieces to go find. So, you know, yes, I think Dave Aranda has completely changed his tune from just a couple years ago on NIL and the transfer portal, and Baylor is better off for it.
When you think about Big 12 play, you think about, you know, a lot of high scoring offenses, but defense, matzo on that particular part. And that, no matter how you change the teams, that's kind of how you look at the Big 12 today, with the teams playing that, you know, you trying to outscore the other team and you maybe get a turnover here or there defensively. Is that basically what you've seen all year long from watching in the Big 12?
Yeah, yes and no. I think that there's a little bit more of the defense in the Big 12 is not as bad as it once was. But especially when it comes to Baylor, yes, because Baylor's offense has been pretty much unstoppable for most of the season, really. And its defense, which is being led by Dave Aranda for the first time since he got here, has been a bit shaky, and that's where you've seen them go out and fill spots in the transfer portal and whatnot, is to fix that bit of a leaky defense. So when it comes to Baylor, absolutely, like it is very throwback Big 12, where, you know, they're scoring a lot of points, like I said, against Texas Tech, but they're also allowing a lot of points. So that makes for entertaining games, at least, and luckily Baylor's offense has been able to just kind of outscore their opponents. So yeah, it's fun.
Give us a name of a guy, if you're not familiar with Baylor, and say, watch this guy today. I think this is going to be a huge game for him. And we know a lot, certainly, about Sawyer Robertson. But is there another guy out there for LSU fans that you would say, hey, watch out for this guy?
I'm going to give you two because they're a package deal on the defensive side of the ball. From what I understand, LSU's got a lot of opt-outs, and they're going to be missing some players on the offensive line. So Baylor has a pair of middle linebackers, Keaton Thomas and Matt Jones. Both of them have over 100 tackles this season. They're the first Baylor duo to do that since 2012. They are being coached specifically by Dave Aranda, and they play kind of in his image, right? They play like he wants them to play. So Keaton Thomas and Matt Jones are two inside linebackers that I think if Baylor wants to win this game, they're going to need to pressure Garrett Nussmeier, and they're the guys that are going to do it. So So those are two guys that I think are going to play a huge role for Baylor today against LSU.
Zach, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Really appreciate it.
And, yes, sir.
Man, we all always keep a close eye on Dave. And what you talked about, him being blunt and to the point, we had a little conversation. He was at Saints camp watching one day, and I was like, man, at least you tell me the truth. Not like these other coaches. And he said, Mike, I'm going to steal your line. How you say that? I grew up in California. And he did it as straight face as could be, and I bust out laughing. He's like, "You get what I'm talking about?" But man, he's great for college football, and yes. I agree with you totally. You talk about a guy that tells you the truth; he does that. So, Zach, thanks so much for joining me this morning, along with Herb Tyler.
I appreciate you having me. Have a great day.
Thanks so much. That was our Inside the Tiger Den segment brought to you by Go Tax Resolution, your go-to tax resolution team. Go Tax Go. We'll be back to finish it off here in hour number one of our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show right after this break. In our number one of our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show, Mike Dettelier along with Herb Tyler at Acme Oyster House here in Baton Rouge. Interesting what Zach brought up about the two inside linebackers. He was kind of focused on those guys. And when you think about it, no Garrett Dellinger, and you lose your starting tackles. And we've seen the difficulties at the center position with DJ.
Yeah.
And Mobinga also has had a lot of issues since he's been thrust into the starting lineup. I think that's a really good call by Zach because I know how Dave uses linebackers, because he'll kind of show you something and then pull out of that right at the last minute to do. I think that is something to watch today, how those two inside linebackers control the flow of the game, not only in the running game, but also getting extra pressure on Garrett.
One of the most intelligent, smart, understanding coaches in college football is Dave Aranda, and especially on defense. This guy knows what he's doing. He's going to put the right players in the right place at the right time to be successful. Now, what happens on the opposite end of the opposite spectrum of that from the offense is what's going to happen. But I can tell you right now, that defense is going to be ready to play, and that defense is going to be licking their chops because they know what LSU has up front. And they know they can be successful with the new makeshift line, if you will, that LSU is going to have. And they're going to be coming after Garrett Nussmeier. And the one thing they know that they've learned over the last 6-7 games from Garrett Nussmeier is if you get him rattled, if you speed everything up, he's going to throw the ball to you, period. And that's going to be a thing. And so I'm thinking that Dave Aranda is really going to put a lot of pressure on him and come from all different kind of sorts of ways and angles. And I think that they're going to focus on stopping the run game as well, because they're going to say, Garrett, you beat us.
Or I agree.
Yeah, because I think they know that he's not – he has – in the last few games, hasn't been successful in doing that.
I think one of the things, and we can talk a little bit about this when we start out in hour number two, is mindset. We had Barry Switzer on a couple months back, and one of the things Coach Switzer talked about was the mindset of a college team. It's not a player, but a team.
Yep.
When they're not involved in that Final 12, and how seriously they take these games and how much focus is there. He said that team that you kind of saw at the end of December or beginning of November,
team.
Early December, it's not the same team anymore.
Nope.
But what Zach is telling us is basically the same team for Baylor.
That's what
it's
he's
not
saying.
The same for LSU. We'll be back with more of our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike Dettelier along with Herb Tyler right after this news break on the Big 870 WWL. Welcome back to our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike Dettelier along with the legendary Herb Tyler here. We at Acme Oyster House. Doors are open here at 3535 Perkins Road in Baton Rouge. Come on by and visit us. Got great food and drink specials here at Acme Oyster House. Jason and the crew will take real good care of you. And if you want to watch the games, Herb and I looked up and all of a sudden, pop, Michigan, Alabama is up on the screen. You'll be able to watch all of the College Bowl games here. If you come, bring a family, whatever. Great meal, great food and drink specials. Also, you'll be able to don't miss a second of all the college football games that are playing this afternoon, and starting off with Alabama and Michigan. And we'll talk a little bit about that in the mindset too. We talked about LSU Baylor and how serious and how, I guess, maybe focused LSU will be on this game. We've heard from Zach, looks as though Baylor's focused. Yeah. They ready for this. But I can almost say the same thing about Michigan. It means more to them than it does to Alabama to really play well and try to win this game. For Alabama, the disappointment is we didn't get in. We didn't get in that 12 tournament. And I do think what Coach Switzer a couple months back on Sports Talk said, I think is not 100% right. It's 2,000% right.
That's right. That's right. So you got two ways to look at this thing, right? So you can be Alabama, and you can be, you know, wallowing in self-misery if you want, and say, oh, we should have been in the 12-team playoff and all this other stuff. Or you can say, let me show you why we should have been in there. And so now you can flip that, and then you can be beating a team in Michigan's caliber, you know, 60-10 or something like that. And now you have an argument, hey, you know, we should have been one of those first teams in the first round of the playoffs to play and show you guys what we can do. But since we weren't, you saw how the first round went, right? And so it's going to be exactly up to the team, as Coach Switzer was saying, when you come off of those, you know, 13 games in a row, and then now you have a three-week layoff, and you also didn't make the playoffs, or you're not in the running for the championship, who is that team? And that's why I like the guys that are younger guys that's going to be able to have an opportunity to play, that's going to be able to say, okay, guys, we have an opportunity to do something special that we didn't get to do all year long, meaning those individuals. Those are the guys that's going to give you 125%. And then you're going to have some of the guys that's, you know, that's been playing all year long that's going to say, okay, who am I? Am I going to finish the season strong like I started the season? And that's going to be important for the leaders in the locker room to be able to get those guys to do the right thing.
I think it's a huge game for Jalen Milroe.
Huge.
I think because this is his last college game.
Yeah.
And he'll be going into the pros. And you're not trying to win the presidential election here. You don't need the majority or the electoral college.
Well, you got the electrical votes. We got you over here at Matt Maynard's, baby.
Y'all take care of that electrical stuff. But, you don't need to pile up the votes. All you got to do is convince
one team
to pick you. And, you know, I've talked about this off the air. You see the tremendous athletic skills in Jalen and his ability to run. And, man, he's got a rifle. Now, he can throw the football a lot of different angles. I think he's better at the deep pass than he is the short intermediate throws. But I think that's something he's got to kind of prove to everybody, that I can throw that little outlet pass. I can hit that little 10-yard out. A pattern or a squaring pattern, because he was so erratic at Alabama, and he's also another one. You get pressure on him, he's going to turn the ball over.
He might throw
just
it right
like Derek Garrett has done.
Well, what you do is you look at Milroe's progression from 23 to 24, completely different quarterback, much better leader. He could throw the football a lot better than he could in 23. The difference is sometimes you see that 23 Milroe creep in the game and show you
against
some things.
Oklahoma.
That's right. And so, and that's the problem, the consistency thereof. If he can stay consistent on being what we know he can be, he will be successful. And this game right here, you're right, is going to dictate whether or not he has an opportunity to be at least a guy to come in and vie for a starting position. Because, you know, you mentioned something. You said something off air that there's not many guys out there coming out. But you know what? There's not many guys in the league right now that are just surefire starters. So every kid that's coming out, I'm thinking about going to, I know this lady, right, on the West Bank in Algiers, right? She got some pills and she got some drinks, and she might be able to make me a little bit younger, go back in time. So I'm thinking about suiting back up, but I'm going to Nicholls State this time because I don't think I can make it at LSU. They hit too hard out there. It's too fast. So, but anyway, I think, you know, you have an opportunity to be able to go into the league as a Jalen Milroe who's played really great football against great talent, great competition, that potentially he can have an opportunity to play somewhere.
one thing with Michigan, and their season's been kind of up and down. A lot of it has to do with the lack of quarterback. Now, they got one now. He'll be the 18-year-old next year.
Well, we're going to see.
We'll see how good he is as a true freshman. But, man, they went in the trenches. They've always had these big offensive, defensive linemen. They went up front. And I still think no matter how you cut it, Herb, that is a huge part of this game.
Well, that's one of those things where you got to look at, you know, Jim Harbaugh for that. Every team that Jim Harbaugh has ever coached that, he started up front. And he would always have the best offense and defensive linemen that you could find in college football. And that goes back to Stanford. You go back and you look at all the offensive linemen that he got into the league at Stanford. Then you turn around and you see what he did at Michigan. The one thing that he never really truly had, though, at both of those places was truly talent across the board at the skill position. And when you've seen him with that at San Francisco, right, and now in Los Angeles, you're going to see what he can do. But that's just carryover from Jim Harbaugh's recruiting style and what he knows. And the one thing that Alabama does is recruit offense and defensive linemen.
That so Ryan Williams guy can play.
Exactly. Well, yes, definitely on the skill position, but up front. So you got two teams that's going to be really skilled up front, with talent as well as size, that's going to be beating up against each other. And I think what's going to make the difference in this game is going to be the skill position.
You think about, you know, Kalen DeBoer taking over for, I think, the greatest college football coach ever, Nick Saban.
Yes.
Especially in the era today where you can leave early and you got scholarship limitations and you can transfer. Guys can come out early for the draft. I mean, all those situations, and he continuously had his team playing for SEC championships or national championships. It was one of the two and sometimes both. And now Shamir Moore takes over at Michigan. He got some big moccasins because that was a huge senior class that left.
Yep.
A lot of juniors came out early and were early round selections. These are two guys that, man, you talk about pressure. Now, you got pressure when you are a college head football coach.
That's right.
You really got pressure when you're taking over for Jim Harbaugh over for Nick Saban.
You know, it's one of those things where you have two dream jobs that come available. The problem is now everyone is looking at you as, can you be that same coach that you took over for? Now, what you do is, if you're Kalen DeBoer, in my opinion, is you be Kalen DeBoer and you go be that guy. You have a place where you can recruit now much better than when you were in Washington. You should be able to get the right guys in, the right staff, and all this other stuff. You're going to get all the money you need and everything you need because Alabama's going to push it. Now, you just be Kalen DeBoer. Don't try to be Nick Saban and none of that stuff. Now, if you're the Michigan's coach, I can't think of his name right now.
Shamir Moore.
What you do is you take a little bit, if not 75% of everything that Jim Harbaugh did, and you can continue to implement that, but sprinkle in a little bit of Shamir Moore. Because what happens is, you know, Nick is a guy that you can't replace. There's no replacing Nick. You have to be something completely different. But in Jim Harbaugh, being that he was only there for 4 or 5 years or whatever that time frame was, you can now utilize a little bit of what he had, if not half of it, and then create your own image within that. Because what he left you with was something that was really great, was how to go to the process of getting to a championship and things of that nature and building the team. I think that's the way you do that, because he was with Jim Harbaugh for such a long time. He understood what that was like and how to produce that Jim Harbaugh, if you will, type of team that I think. I've always been a Jim Harbaugh fan. He's always been one of my favorite coaches. I like what he does with the players. I like how he interacts with the media. I like how he puts his teams together. I like his play calls during the games. I like all of his, everything about Jim Harbaugh is one of my favorite guys. So if I'm, you know, Mr. Moore, I would definitely do a little bit of what Jim was doing and carry that over into my tenure.
One of the things I saw this year throughout the high school season was a lot more visual of Michigan people recruiting the state of Louisiana. At one time, they recruited the state of Louisiana pretty hard, but then that was a big lull in that.
That was in the 90s, late 90s.
And then all of a sudden now, Harbaugh didn't do that.
No.
But now Shamir and his staff, they've shown they were involved in a lot of the big name guys. One of the assistant coaches that I know on the staff told me, hey, you know what? We can look at that and see, man, look, per capita, Louisiana and Mississippi puts out more pro players than anybody, per capita. But it's the running backs, the receivers, the defensive backs. We can find the bigger guys. Mm-hmm. But in the state of Louisiana, when you look at the running backs, the receiving corps, if it's a secondary guy, they have really put a lot of effort in there and have landed two this year in their class for 2025.
Well, most of your really outstanding teams that recruit skill positions are recruiting guys from Louisiana. And it's because there's something in the water that shows that these guys are quick, fast. They have this aura about them that really makes them, what we like to call dogs.
Right.
And they make it happen all the time. And these guys don't play no games. And this is what we do. And they take pride in what they do as well. And then ultimately, when you can take a kid from a Louisiana parish city and bring them somewhere else, they're going to be successful. They're going to outshine everybody. They're going to be most liked, most loved. People are going to want to gravitate to them, and that's what we do. And so I always appreciate the fact that when you have a Michigan, or Notre Dame or, Ohio State, because I remember when Michigan, Ohio State came here and they recruited John Curtis heavy with the running back.
They sure did.
Chris Howard, Jonathan Wells. I mean, they came and got some guys. And it was always phenomenal to see those guys go to those schools because, when I was growing up, you look at TV, we didn't have cable. So ABC, NBC, CBS, you would see Michigan on, Ohio State, Notre Dame. Those are the games that you would see on it. So you're thinking this is the pinnacle of college football. And they literally came and got guys that I played against. And so, they came and visit school where I was at Old Perry Walker, but they didn't offer me any scholarships. But everybody in the South did, and everybody in the West did. And I wasn't going up north anyway. I told him, don't come.
What,
don't even
cold?
Ask. Yeah, it's too cold. Don't come ask me about going up there to New Michigan or nothing like that, man. What's wrong with you? Don't do all of that.
Yeah, one of the assistant coaches from Michigan, he was recruiting the Destrehan area. And they had a couple of receivers there that they went after. It ended up landing a running back from the city of New Orleans and ended up with a receiver. But, man, I told him, I see y'all more in Destrehan than me.
That's right.
And I'm only about 15 minutes away from here. And he got a kick out of it. We'll be back with more of our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike Dettelia along with Herb Tyler at Acme Oyster House. We'll be back with more of our tailgating show right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're back here on our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike Dettelia along with Herb Tyler at Acme Oyster House here in Baton Rouge, 3535 Perkins Road. The doors are open. We got some people that are rolling in now. And, man, Alabama's had a tough time with the weather. Michigan hits a long field goal. It's 3-0. And then they fumble a snap from center. So Michigan set up in a short field.
Mm-hmm.
On our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, it's time for our Tiger Scout Notebook. And it's brought to you by Thibodeau Regional Health System. Totally focused on patient care. I want to thank Greg Stock, everybody along with Thibodeau Regional Health System. Always a big part of what we do here on Saturdays and now today on a Tuesday. So we have on with us Jeff Palermo from Louisiana Radio Network. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Jeffy Jeff, what's up, man?
How you guys doing? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Jeff, been asked a few questions, and we got it on the text line of people asking about what is the secondary going to look like, because that's been sort of jumbled, and Brian Kelly sort of has kept that close to the vest on exactly how he's going to handle this with the safety position.
Well, yeah, I think safety, and let's face it, guys, I mean, safety was a position that was not a strong suit for LSU this season. I mean, Jordan Gilbert coming over from Texas A&M really didn't have a strong season. I think Sage Ryan was okay, but if he had a really good season, he'd be going to the NFL, not Ole Miss at this point. And then, Major Burns, who has opted out, I think he'll find himself on an NFL roster somewhere, but it wasn't a great season for him. So to me, the two guys that really get an opportunity here, especially with Sage Ryan and Major Burns no longer part of the equation, is Deshaun Spears, the true freshman from Denham Springs. We saw a lot of him early on, but then once LSU settled in on the three guys they were going to go with at their safety positions between Gilbert, Ryan, and Burns, Spears didn't see as much playing time. And then the other guy is JV Toviano. This is a guy that has been certainly they experimented with him a lot last year at cornerback when LSU was desperate to find anybody to play the cornerback position after Zy Alexander went down with the season-ending injury. But Brian Kelly announced during the bowl practice period that, look, they're sticking with Toviano at safety. They like him at that position. So this is a chance for him to get out there. I would imagine you probably will see him where Major Burns was playing. So that star position, the hybrid linebacker safety position, and they'll run with him and see how well he performs. Deshaun Spears, there's a lot of excitement about him. Could he be the next great defensive back from this area, or the next great safety? Could he be an Eric Reed? I guess that's the ceiling that a lot of people put on him. I don't know. That's lofty expectations for someone like that.
He's Eric Reed.
Yeah, right. But if he certainly is a guy that's a ball hawk out there. I think the biggest thing for him is, can he be physical enough out there? And he'll need to show that here today against Baylor.
I think, Jeff, looking at the transfer portal, I think all of us have been impressed on what they've been able to do. Certainly along the defensive line, and you got Jacoby and Guillory coming back. You're bringing in some guys that can rush the quarterback. Got a couple guys that can, I think, certainly stretch the field at wide receiver. I think the one area, and we touched a little bit about it, has to be they have to have focus on a couple guys to help out at the safety position, and also a little bit more help along the offensive line. You got a lot of young guys here with virtually no experience. Now, I can't say that after today. I think they'll be getting some experience today. But in the transfer portal, if it's in this period or in the, say, the spring period, I think safety and offensive line, especially offensive tackle, I think will be the areas that they try to hit.
No doubt about it. And there's the possibility, guys, at this point that they have some silent commitments, right? There could be guys that might be playing either tonight or tomorrow, with their seasons wrapping up, that have already expressed through a third party that they may be transferring, and LSU's on their list, and LSU may actually have those kind of commitments. I mean, when you look at it, it's at 14 right now. The number that, with the latest being Josh Thompson, an offensive lineman from Northwestern out of the Big Ten, Brian Kelly mentioned 15 guys that they were looking at. So they may surpass that number. But, yeah, I think offensive tackle, I don't think you're going in to next season. I know they're really high on Tyree Adams, the standout from St. Aug. Who's going to play at that other tackle position? That is still a big question mark. Today, it's going to be Miles Frazier, who's been starting at right guard for them all season long. Miles Frazier will get an opportunity to show NFL scouts his versatility today when he lines up at right tackle. But they're going to have to find someone there. I think they need a veteran guy there. And that's where the transfer portal comes back to bite you, right? Because this is where Lance Hurd, the outstanding offensive tackle from Neville High School, was supposed to step up and be the guy, but he didn't want to wait around, so he ended up at Tennessee. And so now you got to go in the transfer portal and find someone to fill that spot. And then, yeah, safety is they got to figure it out. They got to find an impact player, and maybe they do get a few answers on that here today.
Jeff, I got a question for you. This is going to be interesting. Nussmeier is going to start today. Do you see any chance at Colin Hurley playing today at all?
No, I don't think so. I think this is Garrett Nussmeier's game, as long as he doesn't get injured or, they're a 30-point spread opens up with either Baylor or LSU playing. I don't think they're going to give Colin Hurley an opportunity. I just think that they like, you know, this is Nussmeier. You know, you talk about motivation and guys wanting to play. I think in a bowl game that really is a glorified exhibition, Garrett Nussmeier is excited to play. He wants to play. He's motivated to play. I really think one of the reasons why he got off to such a really good start this season was because of how well he performed in the bowl game. I think that gave him a lot of confidence during the offseason. A come-from-behind win that he was able to orchestrate last season in the bowl game gave him the confidence that, hey, he can be the guy, and he really showed it early on in the season. Obviously, he had a bit of a mid-season slump there, but then ended up finishing the season strong against Oklahoma. I think he wants to build on that performance that he had against the Sooners, put together another really good game here. I still think, while yes, this is it's kind of a weird game because I don't think it really matters at this point whether LSU wins 8 or 9 games this season. And this game, because you got this wave of transfer portal players coming in and incoming freshmen, this game to me doesn't really say anything about the 2025 season. So it's just a game on the calendar, and you go out there and play it. But I still think it matters a lot to a guy like Garrett Nussmeier, and I don't think LSU is willing to experiment and just start throwing anybody out there just to give them a look. I'm sure they'll do that quite a bit in spring football. That's for sure, though.
Yep, got another question for you, Jeff. So we talked about the guys that may jump in the portal to come to LSU. Are there any names that you can think of that potentially may jump in the portal to leave LSU that hasn't done so yet?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. I would imagine there could be a couple more defections, but to me, pretty much the main guys have gone at this point. Colin Hurley would be a guy that may be someone that just kind of reevaluates it and looks at it and says, well, I'll do something else. If Caleb Jackson doesn't feel like he's going to really get a lot of playing time next season with the likes of Harlan Berry coming in and Trey Holly possibly coming back. And then, LSU obviously I wouldn't be surprised if LSU even found another running back in a transfer portal. It's not a need. But it's something that they could possibly do. Maybe Caleb, especially, if Caleb doesn't play, maybe he jumps in. But other than that, I don't know. I don't think there's really anybody that I can think of that hasn't gotten in already that, it might decide to jump in. So I think the hard losses out of the transfer portal, the likes of, to me, C.J. Daniels and Deshaun Womack right off the top, those two guys, it's disappointing to see them go. I think it was disappointing to see Kylan Jackson go. Shelton Sampson, just kind of disappointing. It didn't manifest for him. And then Kamorian Pimpton was another guy that,
surprised for me.
Because
he had a shot to play, and I mean fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know who was advising him there. Maybe you never know what kind of goes on behind the scenes.
Right.
But Pimpton, to me, was the biggest surprise that he decided to kind of tag out and leave.
Well, this is where the NIL dollars, I think, probably play a role in this. I mean, all these guys have advisors, and, because it is a bit of the wild, wild west. Now, granted, Pimpton can't, in November, can't be sitting there and calling up Sonny Dykes over at TCU saying, hey, do you want me to come there? But Pimpton can get somebody to do
maybe
that.
Maybe Sonny did. Now, I know Sonny a little bit. That might have happened a little bit.
So that's how those things go. That's how those things transpire. That's why I'm saying there's probably when we were talking about offensive tackle and safety, there's probably guys that LSU has a handshake agreement with, and we'll find out about that probably in early January. A couple more additions through the transfer portal, guys that are either playing today or tomorrow, and they'll be LSU Tigers before the winter semester begins.
Jeff, Harold Perkins last weekend kind of made it official. We had been hearing certainly a lot of rumors over the last few weeks, and I'd heard somebody actually told me he's coming back. But I'll let Harold break that story.
That's right.
That's not my gig to do it. But I think it was important for Harold to come back
no matter if it was at LSU or where, he might have went somewhere else.
That's right.
Because he's a great athlete with no position. And that's the strange thing is, he is an unbelievable athlete. But where do you play him? Is he a hybrid safety? Do you play him at linebacker? And whatever Blake Baker has in mind to use him, I think that is one of the big question marks going into the spring, and I'm sure he will be limited or basically not even participate. But
right.
How they use him on this 2025 team for LSU is intriguing to me because we see all the athletic skills. But where are you going to play him?
Yeah, and I think you bring up a good point, Mike. The other obstacle in all of this is he's likely not participating in spring football. So it's right. Not like you could – with the new personnel that's coming in, it's not like you can figure out then, okay, where are we going to put them? So, and you've this is your third crack at it, right? I mean, you've the first two times you didn't, you know, you could say you got mixed results. Well, you didn't get any results, I guess you could say, heading into sophomore season because you aborted the plan of playing them as an off-ball linebacker after the first game, and then this year. He was making tackles, but he was not making the big game-changing plays that you're wanting him to make, or making the or wreaking havoc out there and creating second and longs and third and longs and so forth like that because of plays he's making behind the line of scrimmage. So you got one more chance at this thing, and maybe the fact it helps that you're bringing back the same defensive coordinator unless something crazy happens with Blake Baker. Maybe they have an idea. You know, Brian Kelly didn't give us any answer on where he may be playing, but The answer that we got from Brian Kelly earlier this week in Houston is that they got an idea. Harold Perkins is on board with that plan, and let's see how it works moving forward. And hopefully he's ready to go even in preseason camp. We know these ACL injuries. I mean, he suffered it in late September. So where will he be come early camp. August yeah. Oh, as far yeah. as how much no he's going to be able to participate?
One of the things, Herb and I have talked about this, I think would be a great spot for him, strong safety.
Yeah, definitely. Because
I think when you look at it, using him closer to the line of scrimmage to get some pressure on, because that he can do really well. And he has shown the one thing pretty well. He's learned how to drop in coverage.
Yeah.
And he's not a 235-pound linebacker. His second number is two. Okay, it's a 2-2-2 or a 2-2-1. He's not going to get too much bigger than that.
No.
I think mm-mm. strong safety and using him sort of hybrid-wise.
Coming down the hill.
I think it's the spot for him. And that's how the NFL plays people today.
Yep.
Yeah, and what we've seen is him as far as an off-ball linebacker, his head's too much on the swivel, too close to the line of scrimmage, and he can't get off block. So it just hasn't worked for him there at that position. But I kind of like what you're talking about as far as a safety position, but he's certainly someone that needs to be a guy that's going after the passer because, to me, that is his greatest asset, is the ability to – okay, we're going to line you up here. Your job is to try to get to the quarterback as fast as possible and make something happen. And that is where we've seen Harold Perkins excel the yes. most, and that's where he's been the most successful.
And another guy that you think about, that I've been thinking about all season long, and where do you play him, how do you play him, what do you do with him, another five-star athlete in Juwan Johnson, and yeah. what do you do with him, right? Like, where do you put him? I think he has the ability to play pretty much anywhere.
Man, I put him at running back. I think that's more of a natural position for him on the offensive side of football.
I don't know if running back is because I've never seen him run the ball in between the tackles, right? So if you put him at running back, what are you doing with him? Because right now we've seen him put him at running back, and he's not really effective, let's call it that. And so do you try to play him as like a running back type
slot
of
slot receiver?
Yeah. Like a flex yeah. back type of situation. What's yeah. your thoughts on that, Jeff?
Yeah, well, he's a guy that you want to have the ball in his hands because I watched him for 4 years at Lafayette Christian Academy, and he goes down as one of the most electric high school football players the state of Louisiana has ever produced. So whatever it is that you can get him the ball. I never really bought the whole cornerback position. I didn't.
No.
I did not, just because of what I saw of him at quarterback. And then, well, then you're saying, well, why don't you play him at quarterback? You just lost Bryce Underwood, and you can develop him there. Well,
he never really threw the ball. Though.
No, well, he wasn't that good of a passer.
5'11", and he's got kind of a funky motion and stuff like that.
You're talking to Herb now.
Yeah, 5'11".
That's tall. That's tall for Herb. If you talk about a 5'11" guy.
It's a giant, bro.
Yeah,
with you.
But I like the I like the idea of something. Whether you're putting him at slot, can he do something that can he do some of the similar things that Aaron Anderson does?
That's right.
I mean, is he someone that you can develop into that role? Mm-hmm.
I think you could.
Or do you develop him as a running back? Now, at least and Brian Kelly talked about him during the spring saying that this was their issue last year. They didn't know exactly what to do with him. I think now they have at least minimized their options. The defense is no longer on the table. So now you can zone in a little bit better and figure out where exactly you want to play him.
Jeff, one of the guys I know a couple people have asked me about, so I'll throw it to you, Jelani Watkins. Because that is somebody that – Coach Kelly talked a lot about early, and then, man, it almost like fell off the cliff. You didn't really kind of, and I know he got injured.
Was he still? He's still injured, right?
And no, so
he's gonna play today.
No, he's gonna play today. Right. The type of player, because we really haven't seen him. All I know is he's fast. I mean, he is jet fast out on the field. Now, how well he'll hold up with a big hit remains to be seen. But your thoughts on Jelani Watkins?
Yeah, when Xavion Thomas, you go all the way back to the early part of camp, Xavion Thomas had that hamstring injury, and that allowed Jelani Watkins to kind of go out there and flash a little bit. Use his, and what we saw was that he's fast. That is exactly right. He's got a lot of speed, and he's an interesting guy because you figure he's going to play here tonight because Aaron Anderson, Xavion Thomas. I mean, those are your, along with Chris Hilton, those are your three wide receivers, and you're gonna be rotating other guys in since that's pretty much you have left. So this is his chance, and Kyle Parker's still hurt. So this is his chance to show you something. And what you saw out of him, and he's on the small side. He's not the biggest guy.
Yes.
He's 5'9". He's like 160 pounds.
Yep.
But he's a track star out of Texas who can run really, really fast. And so you want to see whether that translates and whether he can make some plays. I'm not going to say that he's going to go out there and catch 5 or 6 passes, but I would imagine you're going to see him out there, and it'd be nice to see him catch some passes and catch a couple passes anyways and see what it's like when he's got the ball in space and whether he can really make some things happen.
Jeff,
Kyle and Billy O. Kyle and Billy O. Guys is another.
Oh,
guy.
I was good. That's
the Billy O. Is it Billy
O? I was good. No. Where he grew up at? Come on, he's a Billy O. But they cut off the T on that.
Okay.
I know where Colin grew up at. Right down the road from where I'm at. So, so we'll get to see Colin play today.
Yes. Yeah. I would imagine he's another guy that you're going to get to see. They really have 5 wide receivers: Hilton, Anderson. Hilton, Anderson, Xavier Thomas, and then Kylan, and then Jelani. Those are the 5 they have going into this game.
One thing with Kylan, he got size that the other guys don't.
He's got size, and he's fast, too.
190.
Yes, he is.
He's
Jeff,
very fast.
Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Always appreciate it, bud, and Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, Mike. Thank you very much. Herb,
yes, sir,
appreciate it, man.
That's a wrap on our Tiger Scout Notebook, brought to you by Thibodaux Regional Health System, focused on patient care. I want to thank Greg Stock, everybody at Thibodaux Regional Health System, always being a great partner here on WWL. We'll be back with more of our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're back here on our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike Dettillo along with Herb Tyler. We're at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road here in Baton Rouge. Come on by and visit us. Doors are open. Got a good crowd here already. And Herb, you talk about mistakes one after the other. Michigan has jumped all over Alabama.
Sounds like a good
16
time.
To nothing. And, man, Jalen Milroe's couple turnovers in this game. Got the ball popped out. It was a pouring down rain at one point. Then it's like here. Then the damn sun come out. And now it's sort of overcast again. But 16-0, Michigan. And I had a feeling that Michigan was going to take this game serious. Okay, they beat Ohio State that last game. But it meant more to them. I didn't know the mindset of Alabama having missed that opportunity to get into final 12.
That's always a difficult situation to be in. But at the end of the day, Alabama, who likes Alabama? No one here. I can tell you that right now. Well, so we're happy
got no hands up
16
for sure.
Nothing. So at the end of the day, this is fun for us to watch. But Alabama is in a situation where they don't know who they are. Their identity is not there at all.
Bingo. I agree with that. Totally, Herb.
They don't know what to do, where to go from here. I think Kalen is just wanting to get this game over with and start fresh tomorrow morning and get ready for the 2025 season. Because, you know, he still has some of those Nick Saban guys that are on the team. And he's going to have some during the season next year, but he's going to have another offseason to really drill into their heads of what he wants this particular team to look like moving forward.
Yeah, I thought he would adjust better to the talents of Jalen Milroe. But you know what? We seeing it in front of our very eyes. It has not worked with those two. The kind of usage of Jalen, because he had Michael Penix, okay, at Washington.
Two different quarterbacks, though.
And two totally different style quarterbacks.
Yep.
Kalen had always had the reputation of being able to kind of adjust to the guy he had. Because not everybody's Michael Penix Jr. either.
Nope.
But, man, it has not really worked at Alabama, other than when they played LSU.
Well, you know.
Man, his highlight reel should be that one 2 years in a row.
Well, it was that game, and then whoever LSU played the game before, and the game before that, the quarterback shined running the football. So, at the end of the day, I don't think it's Alabama being successful. It's LSU's lack thereof stopping the quarterback from running the ball. However, when you talk about Kalen DeBoer and Michael Penix Jr., this guy, Michael Penix Jr., can see the field, put the ball on a rope and on a dime, and put it wherever he wants to put the football. And you saw that last year as they got to the championship game. Now,
you
they didn't
saw
win.
It Sunday.
I was about to say, and then that translated to Atlanta Falcons on Sunday, where he didn't have this outstanding game, but you can see where there was many, many flashes of who this guy is going to be in the years to come. He's definitely the guy that's going to take over. But when you flip-flop that and you go to Jalen Milroe, he doesn't have that. He has the arm strength, but he doesn't have the wherewithal, the understanding, the awareness to be able to put the ball where it needs to be on time to the right player. And then he sits in the pocket too long. He waits. And what I mean by that, he's staring down receivers and looking at routes.
You can
it
almost
doesn't seem
hear
like he's confident.
Like it clicking in his head of
right.
where should I go with
right.
it instead of instinctively
it's not instinctive
seeing where he goes with it. We talk a little bit about Sunday and just how Jaden Daniels, he's the coolest cat out on the field. Okay, give me the ball at the end. I got it. You know, don't worry about it. I got it.
But, you know, we're so used to seeing that from him, though.
Yes,
we saw that 2 years in a row. Even his first year when he wasn't as successful as he was, his second year at LSU, but we saw who he was going to end up being. And then now you've seen his maturation from winning the Heisman Trophy to going to a Washington Commanders team as the leader and starting like immediately and winning the locker room first was the most important thing. And that's why he is as successful as he is. It's not just because of the talent. It's because of the person who he is as far as leading men to being successful. And he does it by what? By being the example. Right? Not showing examples, but being the example. And that's a beautiful thing. And that's why I love Jaden Daniels so much.
We'll be back with more of our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're finishing up our number two of our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. I'd like to tell you, along with Herb Tyler, we're at Acme Arsha House, 3535 Perkins Road in Baton Rouge. Also want to thank Matt Construction, Matt Bill, Bill Beyond, of our presenting sponsor here on our Tiger Tailgating Show. Herb, we talked a little bit about it, but I just got a feeling the way both defenses play that this will be a high-scoring game between the two of them. I see how Baylor's built, and they're built to score points. They haven't stopped a lot of people. Giving up 27 points a game the last six games. And I think LSU maybe can hit some big plays on them.
And LSU's defense, even when they were playing really good, were giving up a lot. So
that's right.
I got a feeling that you may see a high-scoring game here between the two.
Well, the problem I got was I don't know if you're going to see it between the two because LSU is trying to put together offensive line, and Baylor has their defense intact, basically their front seven. So can LSU put the guys together to be able to give Garrett Nussmeier a little bit of time to be able to produce some sort of passing game to get the ball out of his hands quickly? And also, especially when you have new guys that's going to be playing. Now, you have Aaron and you have Chris Hilton. Basically, it's really all the players you have that's coming back that's going to be playing the receiver position and Zay Thomas. But it's going to be difficult to watch, I think, when Dave Aranda starts throwing those blitzes at Garrett.
Yeah, and I want to take a good look at Colin Billiott, who
yes.
He played his high school football right down the road with me, and he was a big play athlete.
It's not a billet. I don't know what a billet is, a billow or whatever.
He's a Billiott. Don't worry about
Billiott.
It. We'll be back with more Tiger Tailgate right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're back here on our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike D'Antilia along with the legendary. Tyler.
Yeah.
We're here at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road here.
That's $6, Mike. You up to $6.
Man, almost 10. Almost 10.
Almost there.
That's it. 3535 Perkins Road here in Baton Rouge. Come on by and visit us. Got a great crowd here. They also got super, drink and food specials here.
Yes.
You can watch the games. They're all across, I think it's 18 total screens that are all across the restaurant that you can watch the games. And we're watching Alabama and Michigan at the present. And I'm sure they'll have a big crowd as LSU will play Baylor in the Texas Bowl at 2:30 this afternoon. You can hear that game live right here on the Big 870 WWL and free on the Odyssey app. We're going to go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. She covers the SEC and LSU, Tracy Coley.
Tracy,
thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Almost said this morning, but I'm all sort of mixed up with time. But, hey, I thought about you, Tracy. I'll tell you why. I'm watching this Michigan kicker hit one field goal after another. I just hope your 49ers don't pick that guy, too.
Oh, my gosh. That was I've been off Moody. And hello, guys. Happy New Year. But I've been off Moody since last year. So it's infuriating to watch him trot out there and keep missing. He missed 7 points. And that was, you know, one of the differences in the game. So, yeah, no more Michigan kickers for my Niners. I could tell you that.
Tracy on social media posted, you know, the object to your job is to kick the ball through the bars. Which
yes.
I thought was a great line. And for Moody, he's a little bit shaky on that particular deal. Tracy, before we get into the game itself, your thoughts on watching what has happened? Because I've said this before earlier in the show that, you know, doing sports talk, I would say 95% of the calls or texts we get is all about transfer portal and how aggressive LSU has been in the transfer portal to fix some of the needs that they have on this team, such as an edge rusher. Certainly some help at the receiving core. You're bringing in some big play guys there. Help along the offensive line. We heard Brian Kelly talk this week about, I'm not finished there yet. So he's basically telling you he's going back to the portal for offensive line. And a tight end is another area I think they'd probably like to add someone, certainly at safety. Your thoughts on how different it has changed with him. A couple years ago, he did the postseason comments about rebuilding through high school football. We're going to use the transfer portal occasionally. And I remember telling Charlie Long, my producer, he can't really believe that, can he? I mean, he's not living in this world. And it's changed dramatically
100%.
In 2 years.
Well, It actually changed the most this year. And I think the case in point to who we're watching right now on TV, Michigan, Bryce Underwood was all about LSU. He loved LSU. He went to visit on his own dime. And all of a sudden, Rich Joyner's get in the way and plop, you know, from reports, $12 million on his lap. And I think that kind of process actually changed the way Brian Kelly's thinking is now we have to play that game too. We have to go after, you have to go after high school kids. And I do think they held it together pretty well, considering all the money that's been thrown at these kids. But I think the portal actually is going to be the way he's going to start leaning more. One, you have plug-and-play starters. You have proven guys. High school kids, they may be exceptionally talented, but you have no idea how they're going to work once they get to your program. So I think having the plug-and-play, and I think that is truly what changed his mind. And I do think the tackle position and safety are going to be key components to this next round of the transfer portal once it opens back up.
Tracy, in looking at this game and having watched Baylor, I didn't see him a lot early in the season, but I got to see a couple games they played later on. It's not your typical what you might think of as Dave Aranda team. And the fact that, you know, the way they can put points on the board, and that's not good news for LSU defensively, because they can hit you a lot of different ways. Got a tandem at running back that have been really good. They spread the ball around a lot. But they also got a dynamic quarterback in Sawyer Robertson. That he would be the biggest concern for me in this game.
Yeah, I think you're going to have – I think Whit Weeks is going to have a big game for LSU to win. He's going to have to almost spy him. You know, he's done that a couple games, and I think the last couple games, LSU's defense really played a lot better considering. But they were put in a lot of tough spots, too, by turnovers. So, for me, it's watching, can they stop the run? They have to be able to contain the run, because Baylor will do a lot of play action to go off of that. So the linebacking core is going to have to be really good in spying him and making sure we stop the run. So for me, that's one of the biggest keys is, can we stop the run? And on the flip side for LSU, how is this patchwork O-line going to be able to handle Dave Aranda and his defensive scheme, blitzes that come their way, and also establishing the run? I think that's critical for LSU. You can't just leave Nussmeier on an island hoping he could throw his way out of this. So those are the biggest keys for the game for me. It's all about the run for both teams, stopping Baylor and their run, and then stopping and getting LSU to run the ball on our side.
I agree with you totally on that, the running part. And we're seeing a little bit of a change of it. I know you covered the 49ers, a big fan of them, and how their offense is sort of built around the running game. And then off of that, you can do play action to the receivers. If it was Deebo Samuel, Ayuk went out real early in the year, and Kittle. I think we are seeing that subtle change also in college football, that you're seeing more and more teams saying, you know, we got to get physical. We got to run the football better. Either that or, you know, they're going to scheme up to stop us. I do think that change is happening in front of our very eyes today.
Yeah, I think that going back to the running back and having a balanced attack, you can't be one side heavy, and in my opinion, and win a national championship. You just can't. You have to have them. You have to have both. And, you know, that's why when Jaden Daniels played LSU, it was so amazing to watch him, because he was the running attack for LSU. He led in rushing and also throwing the ball. You have to have both, because if you don't have both, they're going to keen in on one. If you're more of a running team, they're going to load the box. If you're more of a passing team, they're going to drop eight and try to mix up coverage and potentially blitz you into making mistakes. So you have to have balance. And I think George Kittle, watching him last night, I think I hope Kelly starts to really, like he did with Mason Taylor, really establishes the tight end, because that is the quarterback's best friend. And I think you have to have a tight end like that who can run block and also get out and cause havoc when they're receiving the ball as well.
Yeah, Tracy, you know, that's absolutely phenomenal what you just said. One of the biggest things that I'm looking forward to today is, and Mike and I talked about this a little bit, you know, previously, but the younger guys coming in that's going to have an opportunity to play. I think it's really more for LSU than it is for Baylor. Baylor's going to come in, and they want to cap the season off, right? They want to win this game. They want to go out, especially with Coach Dave Aranda being an ex-coach at LSU. They're coming with all their firepower, and that's it. LSU, we're going to be kind of limping into this game, you know, not having certain guys playing that we would normally have that would give us 100%. And so it's going to be interesting to see the younger guys that's going to be playing. Give us a little bit of your take on those younger guys that you think may see coming in.
Because, Tracy, I think one of it is the big men.
That's right.
We still get, you got to win up front, and that's to me the big question mark today. Can they protect Garrett Nussmeier? One, and secondly, can they be physical in the run blocking areas? Because now you got three guys that aren't there anymore, Miles is moving from guard to tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest challenge for LSU today is how they're going to be a cohesive unit and make sure that they protect Nussmeier enough for him to do what is needed and establish the run. My goodness, I don't know how many times we talked this year about LSU not being able to establish the run against good opponents. The good news for LSU on that side is Baylor is out two guys on defense who opted out. So that is something that they could try to exploit. And when you're scheming up, who can you attack? But I think the O-line has to come together as a team to make sure you get that pass protection. And we got to open up lanes. Like, we have a dynamic running back in Durham. Open up the lanes and let that guy go. Let him loose. I do think LSU has more athletes, even though Baylor is a very good team and they have a lot of athletes on offense. I do think playing in the SEC does have its level. You beat each other up a little bit, but it is against the best talent. So I do feel their freshmen or sophomores, the young guys who are going to come in and play, have a lot to play for. And guys like Whit Weeks have a lot of pride. Now, he's now like the leader of the defense. He's that energizer bunny that's got to get people going. So, and then on the wide receiver side, they got to catch the ball. You got to make big plays. So for me, that's one of the biggest things. And I don't know if y'all are watching this game, but I've never seen so much ball going crazy ever in my life in this football game.
Yeah, we're watching Alabama and Michigan here, and well, early on, Alabama turning the football over all over the place. And I just felt in this game, Michigan felt this game was more important for them because Alabama, I think, still got a little bit of a hangover that we didn't make it into the final 12. Right. And that's debate
sulking.
Both sides.
They're sulking.
Exactly. Of not being happy with it. We talked about this in the first hour, but Harold Perkins coming back. Herb and I have our feelings toward it because of the fact he's such a great athlete. Here's my question is that where do you play him? Because I really think his best spot would be sort of a hybrid, a strong safety outside linebacker. Mm-hmm. We see his ability to rush the quarterback. And I really think he's gotten to be pretty good dropping back in coverage. Now, I didn't know that until they kind of experimented with it, and we saw him. He was very smooth to hit it in reverse. You can't play him up front because he's going to get bounced around physically, and he's never going to be a guy that second number is going to be a three. He's always going to be a 2-2-something guy. Your thoughts? Because I do think with Blake, he's going to have to find the right spot for Harold Perkins to utilize his skills as a pass rusher and also be able to help out in the coverage part of the game.
I agree. Exactly what you just said. When he was a freshman, he was causing havoc with quarterbacks. And I think what they tried to morph him into, he's just not. And obviously, you know, him coming back, he wants to learn more, do better, and add to any draft stock that he could get. So for me, I agree wholeheartedly. Maybe not use him on every down. Use him in pass rushing situations and, like you said, in coverage. If it's third and long, just making sure he's in the right spot because there were times when he would play where it would just seem like he was just lost. You would watch him on film and he would just get lost in the play. So I think utilizing him like LSU did when he was a freshman and letting him just go like a heat-seeking missile and find the quarterback is one of the things that it's going to be a challenge because the defense did get better this year. So for me, it's all about finding the right fit, right plays, and making sure that we give him the most athletic spots where he could just show off and give LSU what they need, which is going to be getting turnovers and getting off the field on third down.
So this is more of a statement than it is a question. In my Friday morning's 8:30 meeting with Blake Baker and Brian Kelly, what I'm going to tell them this week is, Look, guys, let's not overthink this with Bell Perkins. Just put him out there and let him go run and go get somebody. That's all you got to do.
Because you know
exactly
why?
Right. You know, take the dog off his leash, you know, kind of thing. Let him just go get him. I mean, he is terrifying. He is terrifying. If you're a quarterback and you see that dude, you're already thinking in your head, and you could affect the play before it even happens. So
I think part of it is what they need. I think part of it is there's still a hangover from the Texas A&M game as a freshman. When they ran the ball at him, and they were like, okay, we got to use him a different way. You know what? That was one game. I think they've overthought this 100%. Way too much off of that one game.
So don't forget my meeting 8:30 Friday morning with Coach Kelly and Blake Baker. I got this. Write it down
for him and slide him a little note. So this is what LSU fans want to see.
There you go.
Tracy, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Always appreciate your time and insights.
Yes, ma'am.
And happy New Year to you.
Yes.
Happy New Year, guys, and go Tigers.
All right. That was Tracy Coley, covers the SEC and LSU, does a great job. You can get her on social media. Always opinionated, and she's most of the time correct. We'll be back to finish it off here on our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're finishing up here on our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike Dettay along with Herb Tyler. We're at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road here in Baton Rouge. Want to thank Jason, all the crew here. They do a super job taking care of everybody when they come here to Acme. And also Map Construction, Map Build, Build Beyond, our sponsor here. And we couldn't do this show without them. Herb, give me a couple keys today for LSU for a W.
Win.
I can answer that one.
Get a surefire W right there. Now, look, at the end of the day, the guys got to come ready, prepared to play the game, right? And not have this woe is me type of mentality. Just come out there and go play the game and have fun and do what you do. It's going to be a little difficult because you got, you know, you're shaking up the offensive line. You got some guys that's going to be out. But ultimately, Garrett Nussmeier has to lead this team to a victory.
He's the key guy.
Yes. He's going to be the guy that's going to be the vocal guy that's going to lead this guy. That's going to be the example, lead by example, make some plays, you know, get everybody up when they're down, things of that nature. It's going to be all up to him because this is his team moving forward at the end of the day. So, for me, I think that Garrett is going to be the huge key in this game for LSU to win. But not only that is, how does the coaching staff get these guys prepared? Not only for this game, but what happens after this game? Because I think that's what the guys are looking forward to. They're not just looking at this game. They're looking at spring. They're looking at the offseason, the summer. And they're looking at camp. And they're thinking about what are we going to be in 2025. So I hope that the guys can kind of, you know, see this game as the first speed bump in the path of who LSU is going to be moving forward to next year, because I think we have a really bright future for 2025, to be honest with you. And it starts today, so we'll see how that looks.
I think, too, is you got to hit a big play on special teams. Because when you look at some of these games, how close they've been, now they've had some blowouts in some of the bowl games, but the teams that have won have hit some big plays on special teams.
Mm-hmm.
Either punt return or kickoff return, and I think that's a key for LSU. If it's Zaven, if it's Aaron Anderson, they got to be able to set up a shorter field for Garrett or to take one back home to the house.
Well, the last time we saw Aaron Anderson take one to the house, and is he the guy now that's your kickoff return guy? Is he that guy? And I hope so. I hope we see him moving forward as that guy, but I don't know. But ultimately, when you bring up, get a home run play, that also can come in an intercept touchdown,
yeah,
a fumble, forced fumble, you know, pick up and return
a
it
pick
for
a six,
touchdown.
Yeah.
Something, anything that's out of the norm of what you traditionally would see as a touchdown making play.
My thing is, I think you not gonna stop Baylor offensively. You got to be able to slow them down and to force a turnover too.
Well, you have to. That's the only thing you can do, and that's ultimately, you know, when you say slow them down, you gotta keep them to 20 to 27 points total to have a chance in this game. Because I just I don't think you can. I don't think we're good enough to keep them under 20.
I agree with you because this gets to be a shootout game.
Yeah,
it really dramatically favors Baylor
here.
That's right. Because that's their lane of traffic to play in these type of games.
That's right. And you know what's so crazy about college football? You and I could be completely wrong about that. And this
probably will.
But heavily on the side of LSU. It's so crazy because you just never know what's going to happen. And that's what's so amazing about college football and why we love it so much.
Absolutely. For Herb Tyler, Luke Augustin, Mike Dettelier, want to wish everybody a happy new year.
Yes.
Everybody be safe out on the roads. Also, hey, we're going to go to the LSU Radio Network where Big Fave and company will take over. And at 2:30 right here on the Big 870 WWL and free on the Odyssey app, the Texas Bowl as LSU plays Baylor. Thank you for listening, and hey, keep your dial tuned in to the Big 870 WWL.